time on Still Waters. This is NB506812, narrowcasting into the night from somewhere on Britain's waterways.
December 15th, Friday. All night, the owls echoed along the valley in the long tunnel of the night. This morning, a magpie scratched her jagged song across the metal dome of first light. There are not many stars tonight. Heavy cloud covers most of the sky, although towards the west it's clearer. The wind lifts the few remaining leaves on the trees, dry and husky whisperings, the bones of the old year. Earlier, a young storybook crescent moon slid down below the western horizon, and the water shimmers with darkness. This is the Narrowboat Erica, narrowcasting into a mild and moonless December night, to you, wherever you are. You made it. I'm so glad that you could come. So come inside and make yourself at home. There's always a space for you here. Welcome aboard. We're nearing the year's turning, and the season's march continues along the bankside and towpath. But mild air has swept in, humid and mid-Atlantic grey. Sometime last week, a neighbouring boater described the day as being a flat day. It was a good description. There was a flatness to it. But even flat days have their benefits. They bring out the colours, particularly those muted colours of a deepening winter, and they make them glow with life. The fawns and the beiges, barley and corn, russet and port of hedgerow and water's edge, for a while were transformed from winter dieback into vibrant life again. Meanwhile, even the boats are not immune to the year's path and the shifts of darkness and light. More and more glitter and flash as we deck them out in Christmas lights. Inside and outside they shimmer with light that flickers and dances on the waters below. Each boat, a tiny spark of light in the dark. There's something primordial about that. This desire to fill the covering darkness with our light. It's become the most important and profound thing of the whole Christmas time for me. After all, isn't the whole message of Advent about the breaking in of light into the tenebrae darkness? Synthetic and artificial they may be, these cascading strings of lights, but there's also something potently natural and ancient about them, too. It's always lovely to hear from you, and so thank you to everybody who contacted me this week. And special hello to LJ and Bodhi. And I love your pictures of Bodhi. He's such a character, isn't he? And hello to Margaret, and thank you. And thank you for your lovely greetings. And I'm glad things are working out. And following last week's episode, which contained a memory or a reminiscence of Mum driving in the snow, thank you to Anna for sharing your memories. And Anna wrote, "Lovely Richard, thank you. The joys of pre-synchromesh on an icy hill and wheels to the curb. This series has been a gem for memories of daily life. I too had the ball of snow melt and the car slide down the hill despite the wheels to the curb, which was a mound left by a snowplough. But luckily it was less dramatic than Joe, and stayed on the road before lodging on the next unmetalled block, though it caused a head scratch when I found it, and knew I hadn't really left it there. And Hanawasa goes on, "It has also made me think, gosh, those were the days when a snowplough would come down a minor residential road, even into cul-de-sacs. And the footways were gritted. Though the snowplough wasn't always helpful, as I remember my car becoming lodged on the side bank of snow trying to cross it into the drive, with all four wheels spinning uselessly in the air." Great memories. Thank you, Anna. And hello also to Sam and, is it Mercurian on Mastodon? And it's great to hear from you, and thank you for your comments. And somebody else who also contacted me to share her memories after last week's episode was Kaz Sargent. And she said her reminiscences of her bottom drawer, a term as the stowaways noted is not used much these days. And some of the items Kaz says that she still has, a couple of monk egg cups and a mug that reads, "Kissing don't last, cooking does." And Derek Watts also got back in touch with his related honeymoon pajama memory. And he wrote, "Such a fun installment, and yet again this brings back fond memories. Like my mum thrusting a brand new pair of pajamas into my hand as we were setting off on our honeymoon, and me promptly dropping them in front of all our wedding guests." And thank you to everyone who got in contact to say how much they've enjoyed hearing me reading from Mum's book, and I will include some more extracts in future podcasts. And I'd like to say a quick hello to Cheryl Wilson, and thank you so much for getting in touch with me about the Battered Landscapes of Our Edens episode, and thank you for that link. I am also a huge admirer of Leonard Cohen, and you're right, it's a beautifully articulate article or post that gets right to the heart of Cohen and his poetry. He certainly is a voice that we need to hear, certainly at this time. And finally, thank you to all of our Lockwheelers for supporting this podcast. And they are Rebecca Russell, Alison on the Narrowboat Mucker, Derek and Pauline Watts, Anna V, Sean James Cameron, Orange Cookie, Donna Kelly, Mary Keane, Tony Rutherford, Arabella Holtzapfel, Rory with MJ and Kayla, The Narrowboat Precious Jet, Linda Reynolds-Birkins, Richard Noble, Carol Ferguson, Tracy Thomas, Mark and Tricia Stowe, and Madeline Smith. Thank you. A few weeks ago, one of our long-time listeners, Lee Thomas, wrote to me and asked a very interesting and, to this time of year, highly relevant question. And she wrote, "I have a question for you. How do you cope with having a dog in winter, when, from what I see from YouTube videos, the towpaths are pretty constantly a muddy mess? Do you have to wash her off every time she comes on the boat? And don't you then have her constantly damp paws to deal with? And having owned a couple of corgis, I bet your similarly low-slung dog also has a muddy belly to deal with." Well, that, Lee, is a really good question. And one that I think's worth answering in full, as it speaks to a lot of the realities of living in a boat during the winter months. And it also relates to another popular question about the feasibility of living with pets, and particularly dogs, on boats. Well, first of all, if you are like Lee, a follower of the Canal Narrowboat vlogs, then you'll no doubt be aware of the number of boaters who share their boats with dogs. There is, of course, Vanessa from the Mindful Narrowboat vlog with her beautiful Zephyr. And then there's Paul and Anthony from Narrowboat Life Unlocked with wonderful Dexter. And there's also the narrowboat pirate, Heidi, from the Rum Wench, with the lovely Bonnie. And Steve, of course, from the narrowboat Precious Jet with the utterly lovable rascal Charlie. And then there's Amy and Wes from Boat Time, who not only have the gorgeous Rufus, but also their cabin rabbit Rupee. And Caroline and Pete from One More Day Aboard with their lovable Westies. And then there's Louise and Dave from Narrowboat Changing Pace, who do the impossible by not only having two dogs, Willow and Otto, but with one of those dogs, Willow, being a Great Dane. And then there is, of course, Dylan and then Otis, who accompanied the foxes afloat when they were on the narrowboat Silver Fox. And possibly outdoing everyone in the boat dog stakes is Emma, the narrowboat girl, who for a long while lived with her mum on a narrowboat with no less than five dogs, Susie, Teddy Bear, Podge, Peaky and Angel. And I know he's not a vlogger, but if you are on social media, you will no doubt have come across the wonderfully idiosyncratic and colourful Ben from the Higgledy Garden, who, according to the strapline, supplies the best seeds this side of the Alpha Centauri and sustainable growing to save the world and impress girls. And he lives on board the narrowboat Casper with the even more wonderfully idiosyncratic and colourful Flash. And then more on the boat dog theme, you might possibly have come across Maxine Brown's lovely little series of books for younger children on Mexie the Boat Dog that follow the adventures of Mexie, her Lakeland Terrier cross, as they live their lives on board the narrowboat Never Too Late. It offers you a glimpse of this kind of life from the imagined perspective of a dog. I could go on and apologise to anyone that I've left out, but you did get the idea. Canals and narrowboats and dogs seem to go together. Being afloat, and canal and river life in particular, are actually ideal environments for dogs, and in their turn, dogs make such perfect companions. I know, particularly in the past, that there was some concern about lack of secure spaces or gardens, and the idea of a dog being cooped up in what seems to be a small place that once put some rehoming charities off rehousing rescue dogs with families who lived on a boat. But fortunately, that has, in the main, now changed. And out on the canals and other waterways, we live in one big garden, and there's no end of opportunities to exercise a dog. And moreover, cruising means that often it's a completely new area with plenty of new things to provide stimulation. Although, having said that, I really ought to add that some dogs can find it a stressful environment. Out and about, we have met some boaters who have dogs that actually really hate being on a boat, particularly when the engine is running. And it's something that we were very aware of when we were thinking of getting a boat, as Penny was so acutely noise phobic. At one point, even an airliner flying overhead would send her into a panic. However, fortunately, from the very beginning, she was fine with the engine. One of the brokers we went to very helpfully started one of the boat's engines so that we could see the effect that it might have on her. And we gently introduced her to locks, another stress point for a lot of dogs. Not just with the noise, which can be loud, but also that enclosed feeling, especially if you're descending into the lock chamber. And she was okay-ish with that, but we tended to have her out on the towpath with us, as she was a lot happier there. And she never really liked tunnels, but again, the sudden darkness and the loudness of the engine was the stressor. And another thing is that, although I've just now described us as living in one large garden, it is a very singular type of garden. That, again, might not be suitable for all dogs. It's long, but in places very narrow. Not just that, but it can also be very busy with people and other dogs constantly walking past. And when we were looking for a dog, the probability of encountering a lot of dogs on the towpath, and towpaths do attract a lot of dog walkers, was something that rehoming charities understandably took very seriously. And not being able to guarantee that a dog was not reactive then made the range of dogs that they felt suitable for a boater became really narrow. Also, people constantly passing very closely past your windows can be a problem for some dogs, and therefore a problem for those that live with them too. But that's not to detract from my initial comments. Boat life can be an absolutely ideal kind of life for a dog. And it's just worth being aware that some dogs might find it hard, particularly if you're thinking of moving onto a boat with a dog or adopting a dog that hasn't experienced this kind of life before. Boats do make all sorts of unusual noises. However, boats and dogs, and in fact a wide range of pets, generally work together really well. In fact, there's been a long tradition of carrying pets on canal boats. Writing about his experiences with working boat communities in the late 1930s, Tom Rolt writes in his book Narrow Boat, "Nearly every canal boat carries a pet. I once saw an old lady at Brentford who had a great tabby cat wearing a collar who was stalking around the cabin roof with mincing step and flaunting tail while she stood at the tiller." A dog is a far more common companion, however, and most boatmen seem to find room for a kennel somewhere in the cargo space. Often too, a linnet or canary in a cage swings from the cabin roof or flutters in the sun on the deck. White City carried two dogs and a coop of chickens, while granddaughter Betty kept a pair of rabbits on her boat. When the boats were empty, there was plenty of room for children and animals to play. And on one occasion I watched a boat pass the yard with three diminutive children having the time of their lives on improvised swings hung from the cross stretchers. When the boats are loaded, it's a very different story, and animals must find a precious niche amongst the cargo while the children are confined to the cabin. Rolt wryly adds a little later that, as well as being effective as guard dogs and companions, dogs would often double up as a hunting accomplice on various poaching activities, being, as he puts it, accomplished hunters and retrievers. And Rolt's point about boat cats is an important one, and locally there seems to be almost as many boat cats as there are boat dogs. And the narrowboat vloggers Ben and Emily show that it is more than possible to successfully continually cruise with their cat Alan, although Alan is a female. And of course, when talking about boat cats, then there's the inimitable Anna Marie and Kath on their vlog narrowboat experience, and who I think, like David from Cruising the Cut and the Foxes, gently and with great expertise, took so many of us by our hands and guided us through the practical nuts and bolts of canal boat life and living. And in Kath and Anna Marie's case, they did it with their two cats, who were really at the heart of things. But, of course, it's one thing to watch beautiful videos in slow motion capturing happy dogs galloping down verdant towpaths bordered by towering walls of young summer's colour, or the ubiquitous Instagram photographs of contented pooches curled up in front of cozy winter stoves. But as Lee's question implies, we all know that life is not usually like that. So, yes, Lee, let me say straight off the bat, mud can be a real pain. And because of their very nature and the geology of where they're generally located, towpaths that run alongside the canals are especially prone to becoming mud traps. We're perhaps a bit more fortunate than many in that where we winter, there is some high ground which, although even now is saturated and very squelchy in places, at least standing water doesn't remain there too long. And it's also a real blessing that we can access it with only the minimal encountering of mud. And the other thing that makes us rather fortunate is that, like Penny before her, Maggie seems to have an inbuilt reluctance to get wet or dirty. And this means that when we do come across the inevitable quagmires, she will almost always carefully pick her way with feline agility along the least muddiest of the routes, even if that means she has to climb up or down the bankside. And being very short-haired also means that tends not to wick the water and the mud, unlike, say, spaniels who, even on fine days, seem to have that ability to draw water and mud up through their feet and then up their feathery legs with what seems to sometimes seem like a supernatural ability. And furthermore, being short-haired means that Maggie does dry pretty quickly, and dried mud just flakes off her. And so, despite Maggie having rather stubby legs, and therefore, as Lee puts it, being rather low slung in the body, yep, it can be a problem, but it could also be a lot worse. Towpaths, by and large, normally have plenty of footpaths, lanes and roadways leading off them that could offer less muddy or wet conditions. But even so, especially for those continuous cruisers at this time, it must be a significant challenge. And often there's just no alternative but to simply plough through the mud and just find ways to cope the best you can with the consequences. During one of the really wet periods this summer, we tied up, largely because we were expecting some severe rainstorms. But it did mean that we had very little option than just to take Maggie for walks along the same stretch of really muddy towpath. Maggie needs 4, sometimes 5 walks a day. And in just one day, we got through an entire stock of towels in an attempt to dry her off and to contain at least some of the mud. And for those few days, we ended up having just one towel for us and then rotating the rest for Maggie. It was a good job we have a washing machine on board. The thing is, I love the rain, and I love being out in it and walking in it. It's much more my natural element. Maggie's not so keen, but once she's outside, then all her other instincts seem to kick in and she seems to become oblivious to it, unless it becomes really heavy. And so, for me, it's no hardship taking Maggie out for a walk in the rain. But I do also freely admit that it does make, or it can make, life much harder. And as Lee implies, it's not so much the wet, but the mud that can be the problem. Having the canopy over the stern deck has made such a massive difference, because it now functions rather like a boot room where you can remove wet outerwear and muddy boots, as well as towel down Maggie's tummy and legs. Whether you have a dog or not, mud is an inevitable and intrinsic part of life on the water. Summer just as much as winter. And accepting it rather than fastidiously trying to avoid it, which you can't, it is inescapable, is much the best way to approach it. And if mud is a thing that worries you, then this type of environment might not be the most suitable for you. It's going to be a part of your life. And if you accept that, it then makes it a bit more easier to think of ways to mitigate it and contain it as much as possible. As I mentioned, the stern canopy that effectively creates another room has been a real boon. It's that transition place. And this means it's a lot easier to be much stricter about what actually then comes down into the boat. Maggie inevitably is still a little muddy and damp, but that's manageable. Wet, muddy clothes can either be hung in the shower to dry, or if not too damp and dirty, then hung up by the stern hatch above the stove. And having a warm, dry boat does make all the difference too. Okay, from time to time, no matter how fiercely we try to control things, mud will come in. But it soon brushes off. It would be different in a colder or a cooler, wetter environment. In the past, we have experimented with those types of mats that are often advertised as being perfect for families with muddy pets and that can catch or trap dirt from muddy paws. However, In our experience, their effectiveness has been very limited, and a towel still, for us at least, is much the best option. And saying all of this, in all honesty, it was just as much a problem when we lived in bricks and mortar. Some of our books still bear those muddy spottles that resulted in a wet and muddy Penny returning from her walk and being carefully dried and toweled down, only to enter the living room and vigorously shake. She always waited until she got into the living room. And I can also clearly remember heaps of dirty towels and coaxing a recalcitrant dog to lift a muddy paw for me to clean it, and hastily mopping off mud splatterings from the wall. And so our experience is really no more different to those living in a house or a flat. I suppose the difference with a boat, psychologically, is that the space is much smaller, so that you're more on top of it. I know that I am more careful in trying to ensure that I leave the outside outside. When, a few months ago, I asked if anyone had any questions that you wanted to ask me, no one asked me the one thing that I thought many would. And that was, what's the one thing that I miss most about living in a house? And my answer to that would have been quick and simple, because I only have one thing, and that is a back door with a garden. And it is now at this time of year that I miss them the most. And I do recognize, and I was aware at the time, that a garden is a bit of a luxury, and living on land doesn't guarantee having one. And so I counted myself lucky that we did have that facility when we had Penny. But when the weather's bad and you're tired and it's late, there's nothing quite like being able to open the back door and let the dog out, either to toilet or just to have a sniff around. And unfortunately, that's not an option for most dogs on a boat. I know some boaters do allow their dogs out, but even when Penny was getting older and less likely to roam, we would have never been able to have done that. Plus, being on the canal side, it's more important that any dog waste is picked up straight away. This means that we do have to keep an eye on Maggie, or Penny when she was alive, to make sure that she doesn't need to go out, and that if she does, that one of us is there to take her out and accompany her. In practicality, we've got into a nice routine of 4 daily walks with Maggie, and she seems to be happy with that. Sometimes there does need to be a quick 5th walk, but that happens quite rarely. And Maggie is also really good at telling us when she needs to go out, rather than just she fancies a nice bumble around the fields at 2 in the morning. So, to answer your question, Lee, yes, mud can be a pain, but it also, for us, could be a lot worse. And I do have to say that there are times when I do miss just opening the door and letting the dog out. Plus, I'm also conscious that she also needs time outside alone, away from us, doing precisely the doggy things that dogs need to do. Therefore, we do try to ensure that most of the walks are dog walks, rather than human walks to euphemistically exercise their dogs. However, for all of that, it's a small compromise to pay for the many benefits of this type of life and sharing it with Maggie. And one thing, just before I go, please join me next week for a very special Christmas Eve episode. This is the Narrowboat Erica, signing off for the night and wishing you a very restful and peaceful night. Good night. Temperature outside 8.2 degrees. Inside 20 degrees. Humidity 94%. Dew point 7 degrees. Wind direction, southwest. Wind strength, 10 miles per hour. Barometric pressure, 1036.2, steady. Cloud cover, 91%. Cloud ceiling, 2,400 feet. Precipitation, nil. Moon phase, 19.4%, waxing crescent. Day length, 7 hours, 44 minutes. Sunset, 15:54. Sky casting, 8:11.